Hello there, and welcome to another exciting episode of this special edition of History Rock Soundbites. We're focusing on the Cold War, and today's focus is going to be on the Soviet spread, the Soviet occupation of Eastern and Southern Europe, and it's a particular favourite of mine, as you'll see. I'm going to start off today by giving out a couple of shout-outs, giving out a shout-out to one of my special students, Max, who I've been working with quite closely. He's got his summer exams this summer, so good luck to you, Max. Giving a special shout-out to all of the students at Cronton Sixth Form College in Widnes for their summer exams. You shouldn't even be listening to this. You're meant to be revising Germany, but I know some of you do. So big thank you and well wishing to you as well. And I want to also start with one of, my little jokes. As you know, I like to collect them. I've been collecting Russian jokes for some time. And I came across this one recently, so I thought I'd share it with you now. It goes like this. A worker is standing in a queue for a liquor store in Russia. And he suddenly turns around and says, "I've had enough. Save my place," he says to his friend next to him. "I'm going to go off and shoot Gorbachev." So after about 2 hours, the guy comes back and he reclaims his place in the queue. And his friend asks, "So did you get him?" And he says, "Well, no." He said the queue was even longer for that one. You see? Not that we would want Gorbachev shot. I quite like Gorbachev, but that's a whole different story. So anyway, let's get into it. One of my favourite topics, Soviet control of Eastern Europe. And the reason it is, because I used to like, I guess, prompting the examiner to rethink maybe some of their feelings towards Stalin and Eastern Europe when they were marking my students' exams. I always like to give my students a lot of arguments to say that Stalin's control of Eastern Europe actually wasn't expansionist and aggressive, that it was all defensive. So I'll go through some of those with you in a moment. But the big debate really is what Stalin did aggressive, or is what Stalin did defensive? And you'll find that a lot of the essay questions, source questions, things like that, if you're going to look at Stalin's occupation of Europe, will often come down to, that's what it will boil down to. They might use different words for it, but it's the same thing. So we're going to have a look at that. We're going to have a look at some of the arguments. We're also going to talk about some of the methods that he uses to not only expand, but actually to tighten his grip over Europe as well, which is, you know, potentially a line of questioning there as well. So, okay, let's get into it. So it's quite easy to say something on the lines of this, that Stalin was aggressive and expansionist. Certainly Churchill would argue it. The Americans felt that way. Some Western scholars would see it that way as well. And you would pick out an example for, say, let's say Poland. Poland's a good one. The Britons in particular are very upset about what Stalin does in Poland because, of course, Britain entered World War II in order to defend Polish independence. You can point to the fact, and it is pretty brutal, isn't it, that the discovery of the Katyn Forest massacre of maybe about 10,000 Polish officers was clearly an indication, because we, you know, got some reasonably good evidence that the Russians were involved in that. It's an indication that Stalin was looking to remove a potential group of people who could rival him for control over Poland at the end of World War II. You could also talk about how it's said that the Soviets stepped back during the Warsaw Uprising to allow them to be butchered by the Germans. And again, this is about, you know, exerting Soviet control over the region. So both of those things alarmed Britain and the West in particular. And they were also alarmed by the fact that Stalin had promised to hold free elections in Poland in I think it was Yalta, was it Yalta? And then still hadn't delivered it by the time we get to Potsdam. Remember, with Poland, we've got these two governments in waiting, really. There's a government that's been set up in Poland, which is largely socialist slash communist. And then you've got a government in waiting who went into exile during the war, the London Poles, as they're referred to, wanting to go over there and take power as well. So there's a big disagreement about the future of Poland. Big disagreement too about changes to borders affecting Poland also. So putting all of this together, putting together the fact that, you know, they use the Red Army to arrest political opponents and things like that across some of these Eastern European countries, including Poland. You can point to the fact that, you know, in some of these Eastern European countries, with some encouragement from Stalin, you've got communist governments forming coalitions and then holding elections that are rigged, for instance, like in Romania in 1946. Where they're meant to have won 372 out of 414 seats, but most of those were forged. You can talk about how, you know, the communists in Bulgaria, for instance, set up a coalition with the Peasants' Party, but then obviously arrested the leader and had him hanged. So there's plenty of examples there where, you know, brutal methods were meant to have been used. And that leads into some of the methods a bit, doesn't it? Like the use of salami tactics with countries, you know, where communist governments would go into, so communist parties would go into coalitions with local parties and then take over key positions, like slice by slice, as salami tactics suggest, and then eventually, you know, boot out the other party and have that political movement banned, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no doubt that there's a lot that the West were alarmed about. And if you look at the number of countries that seem to fall to communism after World War II, it seems to spread quite rapidly. So you've got countries like Hungary, as we mentioned, Bulgaria, Romania, obviously East Germany, because of the differences between the two countries in terms of future of Germany. And then really what was a big blow to the West was the fall of Czechoslovakia in 1948. It was seen as the last bastion of democracy in that area, and its fall was particularly alarming to the Americans in the West. So all of these countries seem to fall. It all seems to point to the fact that Stalin's there orchestrating it all. He's controlling the Red Army. He's encouraging these communist coalitions to be formed. He's encouraging them to arrest political opponents, etc., etc. Now, all of this is a very easy description. I think it's too easy. I think it's too simplistic. First things first is that Stalin had been invaded by the West via Poland three times in the 20th century. You've got World War One, of course, we all know about that. World War Two, of course, we know about that as well. And you can actually add in the fact that some countries supported the whites during the Russian Civil War, the Brits in particular. And so that's where the third example comes from. That's bad for Stalin. You also have to understand that he feels that the West had delayed opening up the Second Front, that had allowed him to take the brunt of the war so far, that he'd lost more men, although he never admitted this publicly. He only, I think, admitted to about 7 million, but he had lost more men than all of the other allies put together. So he feels that he's basically won the war on his own for most of it. Let's face it, probably has. And that he's now surrounded by hostile capitalist West, who's intent upon overthrowing communism at the first opportunity. And he's been invaded three times. And so he is therefore concerned about securing his borders. yeah, about closing those back doors into his country. So consequently, the countries that fall to communism are largely countries that are bordering or close to the border of the Soviet Union. And understandably, therefore, he's looking for friendly governments in those countries, you could say, allegedly. I would also add to that the fact that he scrapped the Comintern in 1943, which was originally created, I think, by Lenin, but I might be wrong there. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was called the Communist International, and it was set upon trying to spread world revolution. Now, if you look at any of the pamphlets that Stalin had written or speeches that he'd give, he kept emphasizing socialism in one country. He did not subscribe to the idea of world revolution. That was something that Trotsky advocated. He felt it was really important to build up the strength of the Soviet Union so that it can stand its ground against these hostile Western countries. So he wasn't really that interested in the idea of world revolution and its importance. You might also add that some of the countries that fall to communism fell to communism because communism, the communist movement or party, was popular in that particular country. The striking example you can use here is Yugoslavia. Tito, who was the leader of Yugoslavia, the communist leader of Yugoslavia, was chosen because he put up such an effective resistance to the Germans during World War II. He was immensely popular. And so consequently, with no interference from Stalin, a new communist government was established there. And actually, the relationship between Tito and Stalin was a bit frosty. They didn't see eye to eye on economic planning. Stalin seems to think that everybody should copy the Stalinist model for the economy, and Tito didn't agree. And so, quite, he was thrown out of the Cominform in 1947. Elsewhere, you might say, well, he could have spread to, say, Finland, but he allowed it to be neutral. You could say that he could have intervened in Greece and Turkey during their civil wars and, take advantage of those countries and look to spread communism there, and he chose not to. So there are occasions when countries either fell to communism or could have fallen to communism, and nothing was done about it. He might also say that, the accusation that he was just using the Red Army to sort of, coordinate groups and orchestrate a communist takeover is not entirely convincing, because if you look at the Czechoslovakian coup in 1948, when everyone learns that word, don't they, defenestration, when Jan Masaryk, the foreign minister, was thrown out of the window and a communist government seized control. If you look at that incident, there was only about 500 members of the Red Army stationed there at the time. So it's really got not much to do with Stalin, arguably. So add all of that together, add the fact in too that maybe you could say that Stalin tried to negotiate spheres of influence with Churchill during the percentages agreement, right? But then, of course, the Americans rocked up and said, no, you can't do that. It's got to be left to the United Nations. You might say, well, what other choice was he left other than to encourage the establishment of friendly communist governments in those countries? Churchill was absolutely well aware of Stalin's security concerns, but and would have worked with him on that in a practical way, in a real politic way. But of course, they weren't allowed to. So I think it's just too simplistic to say that he's aggressive and expansionist. There's much more to it than that. The other thing we've mentioned then are some of the methods that this occupation, this spread, some of the methods that we used, and equally some methods to strengthen or maintain that control. So salami tactics would be one example, the idea of coalition governments being formed up and the communist governments then taking over key positions and getting rid of the rivals. rigged elections. So Romania, we could use that as an example. The use of the Red Army to arrest, anybody who's going to oppose a communist government there. The Cominform, we've mentioned, set up in 1947 in order to coordinate other political parties, communist parties across Europe. You could also mention the Comic-Con and how he used that in order to strengthen his control over Europe as well. In response to the Marshall Plan, the whole idea is to bring in greater sort of economic control within Eastern Europe. You would also need to have some specific examples of countries that you can mention. We mentioned Poland. We've mentioned something on like the rigged elections. You know, pick out some other examples of either the techniques, the tactics, the methods that have been used, or equally examples of, you know, brutal control, or, you know, that fits into this idea of him being aggressive and expansionist, or, you know, where countries where he could have gone further and he chose not to, or where it's defensive. And that's it, really. So in summary, personally, I don't think it was all about aggression and expansion, but, you know, you might have different ideas. Brutal, yes. Brutal methods used at times, yes. But I think it's just a step too far to say that. But look out then for exam questions that are picking up on that kind of, you know, aggression, not aggression, defence, you know, those sort of lines of arguments within the essay questions or the sources. It's entirely possible. So I hope that was useful to you. It's a topic I really do like. I really do love it and get into it. And I hope you do too. I'm going to tip my hat to you then for this afternoon and bid you farewell. Thank you.